I want you to picture a scenario. It's 4:45 p.m. Tuesday. You're a senior partner at a law firm. Maybe your office overlooks the 405 in Irvine. You are in the absolute final stages of a massive corporate acquisition. I mean, we are talking nine figures, the kind of deal that makes the firm's entire year. The tension is high, the coffee is stale, and you're just waiting for that green light.
The please don't mess this up phase of the deal.
Exactly. Then your phone rings. It's the client's CFO. Now, usually that's a call you want to take, but this time the tone is different. They aren't calling to say, good job. They ask a single, very specific question. Can you send over the documentation proving your IT systems maintain continuous security monitoring and data integrity?
And that is the moment your stomach just drops.
Right, because if you don't have an immediate answer, if there's just silence on the line, you have a massive, massive problem. That silence, that's the sound of a deal falling apart.
Or at the very least, the sound of your firm losing a huge client to the competitors down the street who can answer that question instantly.
That is exactly what we're digging into today. We're looking at a stack of research on something that sounds like, well, like alphabet soup. SOC2, type 2 compliance. It sounds dry, it sounds like IT jargon, but as we went through these sources, it became so clear. This is basically the oxygen mask for law firms in 2026.
It really is. And I get it. As soon as you hear compliance certification, your eyes tend to glaze over. You think, I went to law school to argue cases, not to manage server racks.
Bro.
But if you look at the landscape today, especially for firms in competitive markets like Orange County, Newport Beach, Irvine, this isn't an IT issue anymore. It's a business survival issue.
The source material we have is basically a survival guide. We're looking at why cybersecurity has shifted from like a nice to have to if you don't have this, you can't play in the big leagues.
Yeah.
So our mission for this deep dive is to figure out why this specific certification SOC2 Type 2 is the new gold standard. Why are clients demanding it? And honestly, is it something a firm has to do themselves or is there a smarter way?
The short answer is there's a smarter way, but you really have to understand the why before you can get to the how.
So let's jump right in. Let's unpack the jargon first. I see SOC2, I see type 1 and type 2. It feels like I need a decoder ring. What are we actually talking about here?
So SOC stands for Service Organization Control. It's an auditing procedure. Basically, the American Institute of CPAs, the AICPA, created a standard to make sure service providers manage your data securely. It's not a law, it's a standard of trust. But the real confusion I find is usually in that difference between type 1 and type 2.
The source material had a really good analogy for this that stuck with me. It compares it to a snapshot versus a movie.
It's the perfect visualization. Think of SOC2 type 1 as a photograph. An auditor comes in, looks at your security controls on one specific day, let's say last Tuesday at 2 p.m. They see the firewall is up, the server room door is locked, everyone has a complex password. Click, they take the photo, you pass.
Okay, so I'm secure at that exact moment, but that feels a bit like cleaning your room just because you know your mom is coming over.
That is exactly what it is. You can suck in your gut for a photograph. You can make everything look perfect for 1 hour. But what happens on Wednesday? Or 3 months from now when a junior associate forgets to update a server or, leaves a laptop in an Uber? Type 1 doesn't tell that story. It doesn't prove consistency.
And that's where type 2 comes in.
Correct. SOC2 type 2 is the movie. The auditor doesn't just look at one day. They evaluate how effective your controls are over a long period, usually 6 to 12 months. They want to see that the house stayed locked every single day, not just the day the inspector was there. They check logs, incident reports. It's forensic.
That makes a huge difference in terms of trust, I mean. Because if I'm a client, I don't care if you were secure last Tuesday. I care if you're secure for the 6 months you're holding my sensitive merger documents.
Precisely. And that's why the source material calls this the gold standard. For a law firm, consistency is everything. You can't have a good enough day when you're protecting attorney-client privilege. You need proof of consistent protection. That's what Type 2 offers. It proves you aren't just lucky, you're disciplined.
There's another concept in the research that I thought was fascinating. They call it the parachute model.
Oh, I love this one. It's such a great way to reframe the cost and the necessity.
Right. The idea is nobody questions the cost of a parachute when they are jumping out of an airplane at 15,000 feet. The value is obvious. You don't haggle over the price while you're falling.
Right. But the problem is, a lot of firms treat cybersecurity like a parachute they can buy after they've already jumped. They treat it as optional until the disaster strikes. But the argument the sources make is that in the business reality of 2026, you're already in free fall. The jump has happened.
Because of the regulatory environment.
Exactly. The ground is rushing up fast. You've got the California Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA, you've got GDPR for any European clients, and even the American Bar Association's model rules.
I wanted to touch on those ABA rules. They specifically talk about reasonable efforts, right? That seems like such a vague legal term.
It is, and that's on purpose. But the interpretation of it shifts over time. The ABA requires attorneys to make reasonable efforts to prevent unauthorized disclosure of client information. The argument here is that the very definition of reasonable has fundamentally changed. 5 years ago, maybe a good antivirus and a locked filing cabinet was reasonable.
But not today.
In 2026. Reasonable means having SOC2 Type 2 infrastructure. If you don't have it and you get breached, you can't stand in front of a disciplinary board and say, we tried our best.
Yeah.
If the industry standard is SOC2 and you're running a Type 1 or nothing at all, you just aren't meeting the baseline. You aren't making a reasonable effort.
That leads to this huge aha moment I had reading this. It's about the transfer of burden. We tend to think of law firms as these isolated islands, but they're part of a supply chain.
That is the critical context. Think about who the clients are, especially in a place like Orange County. You might be representing a regional bank, a massive healthcare provider, a government contractor. Those places are heavily regulated. Banks have the SEC, hospitals have IPES.
So when they hire a law firm,
they're essentially handing over their data and their compliance burden to you. If the bank is a fortress spending millions on cyber defense, but they send their data to a law firm that's using a leaky server in a closet, well, the law firm becomes a weak link.
It's the path of least resistance for a hacker. Why attack the bank when the lawyer has the same PDF?
Bingo. And that is why these corporate legal departments are now conducting these rigorous audits of their outside counsel. Mm. They aren't just asking, are you good lawyers? They're asking, are you SOC2 Type 2 compliant? If the answer is no, they literally cannot hire you. Their own rules forbid it. So they'll just move on to the firm down the street in Costa Mesa that checked the box.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of what this actually measures. It's easy to say we're secure, but SOC2 breaks this down into five trust service criteria. The sources call them the pillars of the certification. I think we should run through these.
Let's do it. These are the five things the auditors are actually testing against.
Okay, first up is security. This seems like the obvious one, the keep the bad guys out pillar.
It's the foundation, the digital castle stuff, firewalls, intrusion detection, multi-factor authentication. But in an SOC2 audit, they don't just ask if you have a firewall. They're asking, how is it configured? Who can change it? If someone tries to hack in at 3 a.m., does an alarm go off somewhere? For a law firm, this is about protecting case files, billing records. It's checking every lock on every door and window.
Okay, that's the baseline. The second one, though, struck me as so relevant for lawyers. Availability.
Huge for lawyers. Availability asks a simple question. Is the system actually running when you need it? And is it resilient?
Because court deadlines wait for no one.
Exactly. Imagine it's 11:00 p.m. You have a filing deadline at midnight. Suddenly your document system goes down. Maybe it's ransomware. Maybe a server just failed because the AC unit broke. If you miss that deadline, that's not an IT annoyance. That's potential malpractice.
So SOC2 availability controls ensure what? Redundancy, backups.
All of it. Redundancy, backups, and a disaster recovery plan that's actually been tested. The auditor wants to know, if the main server melts down, how fast do you back up? Is it an hour or 3 days? If it's 3 days, you fail. A law firm cannot be offline for 3 days.
Makes total sense. Next is processing integrity. This one sounds a little abstract.
It does, but it's critical for transactional law. It means the system processes data accurately. It doesn't drop zeros or corrupt files.
Give me a real-world example of where that could go wrong.
Think about drafting merger documents. You're using software to generate these massive agreements. If a tiny data corruption error changes a figure, drops a decimal point, or deletes a clause during a file transfer, the consequences are financial ruin. Processing integrity just ensures the system does exactly what you tell it to do, without errors.
Right. Okay, and then we have the big one, probably the most important for our listeners, confidentiality.
This is the holy grail. This is attorney-client privilege in digital form. The certification checks if you have barriers in place to ensure that only the people who should see a document can see it.
So it's about minimizing access.
Exactly. Does the junior paralegal on a divorce case have access to the highly sensitive M&A files for a different client? If the answer is yes, you have a major confidentiality problem. SOC2 forces you to prove you have least privilege access controls. It proves you're honoring the promise of privilege with technical controls, not just a policy in an employee handbook.
And finally, there's privacy.
And this is different from confidentiality. People mix them up. Confidentiality is about your business secrets. Privacy is about personal information, names, social security numbers, health info.
PII. Personally identifiable information.
Exactly. With laws like CCPA in California, how you collect, store, and destroy that personal data is heavily regulated. If you're handling a class action with medical records for 500 plaintiffs, that's all privacy data. This pillar makes sure you're handling that sensitive human data correctly.
So those are the five pillars. It's a lot more comprehensive than just install a firewall. It feels like a whole business philosophy.
It is. It's a holistic view of trust. It means your entire operation is built around protecting information.
Now, I want to talk about the stakes. We mentioned the silence on the phone, but the source material brings up the Panama Papers leak as a cautionary tale.
That is the classic horrifying example. That was a law firm, Mossack Fonseca. They had a massive data breach. It didn't just embarrass them, it destroyed them. The firm essentially ceased to exist. It showed the world that law firms are just treasure troves of secrets. If you crack one firm, you get the secrets of hundreds of high-profile clients.
And hackers know this.
They absolutely do. It's an efficiency game for them. They know a boutique firm in Tustin might have a smaller security budget than Bank of America, but that firm holds Bank of America's secrets. It's a high-value target with lower defenses.
And the risks aren't just hackers, right? We touched on malpractice earlier.
Yes. The tide is shifting. Courts and bar associations are losing patience with the "I'm not a tech person" excuse. If you fail to protect client data because you didn't have these controls, you can face liability. You can be sued. And then there's the simple business risk, client attrition. If a competitor can show that SOC2 certificate and you can't, you are losing business, period.
The sources mentioned that this applies across the board, too. It's not just the big skyscrapers in Irvine.
No, it's everyone. Whether you're in Anaheim, Huntington Beach, Fullerton, hackers don't care about the size of your lobby. They care about the value of your data. If you have valuable data, you're a target.
Okay, so we've established the problem. The sky is falling. The parachute is definitely needed. Let's talk about the solution. Because looking at this list audits over 6 months, five pillars, disaster recovery, it sounds incredibly expensive. Does a law firm have to go out and get this certification themselves? Do they need to hire an internal auditor?
That is the most common question. And the answer is, generally, no. And that is the good news.
Thank goodness, because I can't imagine a 10-person firm trying to manage all that.
It's not feasible. Most law firms are not technology companies. They shouldn't be building their own server farms and hiring compliance officers. That would be a huge distraction from practicing law.
So how do they get the badge? How do they pass the client's audit?
They rely on their managed IT provider. The source material really highlights this as the main solution. You partner with an IT provider, like the one they mentioned, Technegian, that already holds the SOC2 Type 2 certification.
So you're essentially piggybacking on their certification.
In a way, yeah. Think of it as inheritance. The provider manages your infrastructure. Their certification covers the servers, the monitoring, the backups, everything they touch. So when your client asks, "Are your systems secure?" you present your provider's audit report. You say, "Our infrastructure is managed by a SOC2 Type 2 certified partner."
That seems much more manageable. But surely you can't just pick any IT guy from the phone book.
No, absolutely not. You have to vet them. The sources give a checklist of what to look for, and it's really important. First, you need verified reports.
Meaning, don't just take their word for it.
Right. Don't just let them put a secure logo on their website. Ask to see the actual audit report from an independent CPA firm. If they hesitate, or say, "Oh, we're working on it," run. You need the report in hand.
What else?
Legal expertise. This is crucial. A generic IT guy might know how to secure a server for a dentist's office, but does he understand e-discovery? The nuances of attorney-client privilege. The specific software legal firms use. You need a provider who speaks lawyer.
And the third thing they emphasized was local presence. This was interesting because we live in such a remote world. Why does it matter if my IT guy is in Irvine or in, I don't know, India?
It matters when things physically break. Remote support is great for password resets. But if a server physically fails in your Newport Beach office or you have a crisis in Santa Ana, you need someone who can get in a car and be there in 20 minutes.
That makes sense. You don't want to wait for a part to be shipped.
Exactly. The source material specifically mentions the value of coverage across Orange County Lake Forest, Mission Viejo. When the pressure is on, physical proximity is part of that availability pillar we talked about.
Yeah.
You want a human being walking through your door with a replacement, not a support ticket number.
And beyond just avoiding disaster, there are actual benefits to this, right? It's not just about fear.
Absolutely. There are carrots here, not just sticks. One big one is insurance.
It's a cyber insurance.
Yes. Premiums are skyrocketing. But if you can go to your underwriter and show them you're using a SOC2, type 2 certified provider, that proves you are a lower risk. Underwriters love that. It can lower your premiums significantly.
And I imagine it just streamlines operations.
It does. When you have these strict protocols, onboarding new staff is easier, everything is documented, there's a process for everything.
Yeah.
And it stops the shadow IT problem, where lawyers are using their personal Gmail because the work system is too clunky.
And let's not forget peace of mind.
Which is priceless. If you are a lawyer, you have enough to worry about. You're worrying about the judge, the opposing counsel. You shouldn't have to also worry about whether your email server is being hacked. Knowing a certified team is watching the wall lets you focus on practicing law.
So bringing it all back together, we started with that nightmare phone call from the CFO.
The show me the proof call.
If you follow this advice, if you have that SOC2 type 2 framework in place through your provider, that phone call goes very, very differently.
It becomes a very short, pleasant conversation. You say, absolutely, I'll send over our provider's SOC2 type 2 audit report right now. And just like that, you've instilled trust. You've proven you're a professional operation. You're not the weak link.
It really is the bridge between technical security and professional trust. It tells the client, your secrets are safe with us, and we can prove it.
And in 2026, that proof is the currency of the realm. Without it, you're just promising. And promises don't pass audits.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want you to think about your current setup. Maybe you're driving to your office in Irvine right now, or you're at your desk in Costa Mesa. Ask yourself, is your security a snapshot or a movie?
Do you have a photo of a locked door from 3 years ago, or do you have the surveillance tape proving it's locked right now and yesterday and the day before that?
And here is the final thought I want to leave you with, something to really mull over. We talked about the client asking you for an audit. But let's flip it. If your biggest client called you right now, this second, and asked to audit your cybersecurity defenses, would you be ready to show them the proof? Or would there be silence on the line?
If the answer is silence, you have some work to do.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. We'll catch you next time.